Today's society confronts us with conflicting opinions about what it means to be a good lover. How do you rate? Or better yet, how would your lover rate you? In this study, Bob Shank will show you how to discover where you rate on God's scale as a lover. Now here's Bob.
Tonight, we're continuing in our discussion about relationships. We've looked at some pretty unusual things, if you think about it, up until now. Things about issues as diverse as why in the world men and women have an attraction for one another in the first place. Kind of interesting when you think about that which draws us together, isn't it? And how incomplete a guy named Adam was when he found himself alone, and zebras and rhinos and pigs and cows weren't enough to make him happy. Am I ever glad he wasn't satisfied? Things could have been bad news. We looked a little bit about love and how it is that love is not an easy thing to talk about. The reason is we've got one catch-all word for it. We think we are totally definitive when we talk about love, when in fact the idea of love really comes in a lot of different directions, doesn't it? We talked about three kinds of love. You remember what they were? Head love, where you decide you're going to love somebody because it's what you want to do, and that which you do springs from that. We talked about heart love, the kind of love that you have for people because they're friends and because you really want to spend time with them and because it's satisfying, it's pleasing, it's comfortable to be with them. Do you have people like that, that you're comfortable around, that it's enjoyable to be with? We talked the third time we were together about marriage. Is there a marriage in your future? We live in a world where there seem to be two great opposing ideas. Half the world seems to be married and they're convinced they'd be happy if they were single, and the other half of the world is single and they're convinced they'd be happy if they're married. Isn't it amazing how that is? We talked about some of the things that we might be able to discern in our lives that would tell whether or not we were built to be married or single, with an emphasis on the fact that if you're married, you're built to stay married. If you're single, it's still a question. But we sure would advocate that if you're married tonight, it's pretty certain you ought to stay that way. Tonight, we're going to be talking principally to the men. Now, if you're a gal, here, how many are gals tonight? It's just good to get the arms working, you know, the circulation's good. If you're a gal here tonight, it's not a lost evening for a couple of reasons. One, you may have come with a man, and you need to exercise his ribs while I talk. So that'll be important if you're here with a spouse, ladies. You may be here with someone who isn't your spouse, but who knows what's coming in the future. And if that's the case, you need to know whether that bum really loves you or not. And so it's important for you to listen up tonight, right? We could really destroy some plans. We could have a bulletin board up here next week for new and unused wedding dresses. Bought it 50 cents on the dollar. You may be here just totally alone tonight, gals, and you need to know what love looks like so that when it comes along, you really know how to spot it. Tonight, the subject is, what does it mean to be a lover? And, you know, we really kind of live in a funny world when you mention that word. What does it mean to be a lover? TV and movies have tried to convince us that what it means to be a lover is that you change girls more often than you change your socks. That somehow a lover is someone who has great lists of conquests. That they have to throw away their little black book every year until they get a PC where they can store it all on hard disk. That the social life is just so resplendent that, boy, you know, you're not a lover unless you got a girl on every block. That's what a lover is. Well, it really isn't. You know, you could describe the neighborhood cat with the same kind of description. So that doesn't necessarily make us much different than a lot of other elements of nature that we don't necessarily want to compare ourselves to. If people are different, and I believe they are, and we'll look at how different we are in a little while, but if people really are different, then what it means to really be a lover has got to be different than what we expect that it is. It would really be interesting tonight, if we had the time and the interest, if I had the time and you had the interest, and asking the question, how are you as a lover to the guys? And asking the gals, how is he as a lover? Wouldn't it be interesting to see how those answers matched up on a scale of 1 to 10. And we're not just talking about in the rack. I mean, let's get serious here. We're not just talking about the physical aspects of life, though that's what the world tries to tell us that love is all about, that it all has to do with what goes on when the lights are out. But in fact, there's a whole lot more time in your life spent with the lights on than when the lights are out. And I found out at our house, when the lights go out, so do we. So I'm a little unclear as to how long the lights are out, because when the clock goes on, the light goes on, and it's all over anyway. So the real issue is, what kind of lover are you with the lights on? How are you in terms of relating to the meaningful person in your life? And guys, it's going to get bloody here in a little while as we talk about what that really means. And I want you to know that this is not an easy subject. As a matter of fact, every woman in this place who has had the experience of looking for a mate would be able to probably give a hearty pie-o silver to this one. I got a little list together that is entitled The Ideal Husband. Here's what every woman is looking for: a man who's a brilliant conversationalist, a very sensitive man, kind and understanding, truly loving, a very hard-working man, a man who helps around the house by washing dishes, vacuuming floors, and taking care of the yard, someone who helps his wife raise the children, a man of emotional and physical strength who's as smart as Einstein but looks like Robert Redford. The problem... Yeah, all the guys are saying, hey, just describe me. That's what every woman's looking for. Do you know what every woman gets? He always takes her to the best restaurants. Someday he may even take her inside. He doesn't have any ulcers. He gives them. Anytime he gets an idea in his head, he has the whole thing in a nutshell. He's well known as a miracle worker around the house. It's a miracle when he works. He supports his wife in the manner to which she was accustomed. He's letting her keep the job. He's such a bore that he even bores you to death when he gives you a compliment. And he has occasional flashes of silence that make his conversation brilliant. You know, sometimes it's tough when you get buyer's remorse over relationships, isn't it? Have you had those moments where you wonder if you've gotten yourself into something that you really wanted to stay in? Is the love flickering? Are you happy with what the definition of love in your life seems to be? Let me remind you that we looked at the fact that though we tended to contemporize a little bit this idea of head love, heart love, and hot love, the kind of love that you have in the bod. It isn't in the brain, is it? When the bod says, I want it, that's a whole different kind of love. 2,000 years ago in the Greek language, they were a little bit more precise with this idea of love than we are. They actually had three different words that described those three kinds of love. The first kind, the physical love, the hot love, they talked about is a word, eros, from which we get things like erotic. It's the idea of every nerve in your body alive and kicking, you know, driven by the glands. That second kind of love that exists among friends, the idea of phileo, the word from which we get Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, the idea of the buddy, companion, fun to be with them, warm, fuzzy kind of love. The third kind of love in that classical Greek was a word that we know today as agape or agapeo. It's a word that described a kind of love that didn't exist much around people, not because they couldn't define it, but because they couldn't find it. A kind of love that emanated from the head, not just the heart or not just the body, but a kind of love that drove people to do that which was always best for the other person. A selfless love that took the concerns of the other person as the priority, that would always see selflessness as the driving motive in all of the affairs of a relationship that was based on this special kind of love that happened by choice, by decision, by an act of the will, not driven by emotion. And you know the difference, don't you? A lot of people are driven by emotion in everything they do. Back when I was in the sales world, and if anybody's ever been in selling, you know that you've been trained to recognize that there is a big difference between the head and the heart. And in sales, they train you to recognize that when you try to sell anybody anything, you have to start by educating them with regard to the facts so that the mind is in consent with a decision. But if you only drive to the mind, you'll never get anything done because the mind won't make a decision for the person. The mind can be satisfied with the fact that the facts are straight and that it makes sense, but until the emotions get involved, that person, that prospect, is going nowhere. The mind can inject a veto, but the emotions have to say go. And so the trick in sales is to do enough to get the mind going that direction and then get the emotions going to the point where the emotions will carry the ball. Well, we kind of get going the same way in our lives with love, don't we? Seems like our head can say no, but in fact, if the emotions are all voting yes, and we're a little weak because we've had too much sugar or not enough coffee or whatever our particular chemical combination is, we're subject to doing all kinds of crazy things that if we said we were in our right minds, we would have never done. We've got all kinds of what we'd call good sense when we look back on life, but when we look ahead on it, we are subject to all kinds of stupid decisions because the emotions take over the wheel. Well, that's not the kind of love that we're talking about with this head love, this thing the Greeks called agape that they couldn't find anywhere, but all of a sudden became a heavily used word when some guys got together under God's guidance to write a book that we have today, which is the back half of the Bible in the New Testament. This idea of agape love was the word that was picked up to describe something the ancients never thought of before, and that was the idea that the gods would love people. The God of the Bible comes along and he says, I love people selflessly. There's nothing much in it for me. There isn't really anything people have that I couldn't get if I wanted it. It is not a matter of saying, oh, come on, please, won't you give it to me? Because God can get it. I mean, you may think that you've got it hidden from him, but the news is he's got the map and he can take you out of the scene and get to it anytime he needs to, so you're no hindrance for him. But God comes along and says, I want to be selfless with people. I want to love them in a way that they've never been loved before. And that kind of love is so unique that it defies description in human terms. You can't compare it to anything because it's a kind of love that people just don't produce on their own. It was so baffling because Plato had said years before that the gods would never love man. Man was too unlovable. The gods must be intellect and no emotion. Love emanates from the emotions, Plato said, and not the will. Therefore, it is not possible that the gods would love man. And God comes along, and God says, whatever these guys had conceptualized about their mythological gods, the reality is that I love from the head, and my heart's in consent with it, but my head says I'm deciding to love man. And then all of a sudden, in the midst of that, as those New Testament writers, specifically the Apostle Paul, in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25, talks to husbands. Do you know what he says in husband-wife relationships? He says, husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church. Or, men, if you really want to be a lover that will really be special, the kind of lover that nobody knows much about, move into life, interact with a special person in your life and love them the same way that you see God loving man. And then the explanations become resplendent. You say, I don't know if I really need to love my mate that way. Let me ask you something. And you don't need to respond to me, no hands in the air, you don't have to keep score. But has it ever been true around your house, guys? Have you ever come in from a long day where you thought everything was going to be ready for you? I mean, she knows you normally arrive home at 8:15 like you always do. The red carpet should have been out. Maybe it's still out at the cleaners, but it wasn't there. You get in the house. You do not smell dinner on the stove. The candles are not lit on the dining room table. Somehow the slippers and newspaper are not in their place next to the chair where they should have been. You know there's trouble, with a capital T, because all of a sudden you begin to see some things going on at home that do not spell good times in the house tonight. All of a sudden it becomes clear, first of all, that your wife is suffering from a self-image problem. Now, is it possible that women in this day and age could suffer from a problem in self-image? I mean, is that even conceivable? Have you ever encountered your wife when it appeared that she was unable to handle stress? Do you have stress at your house? My wife's got the most stressful stuff going on at our house you'd ever imagine. Stress, you want to talk stress? We've got a thing called a divorce machine in our laundry room. Anybody have a divorce machine? We have a divorce machine. You put socks in and they're couples when they go in and they come out singles. It's an incredible thing. She handles the stress in a home that you can't imagine. And I encounter my wife at times when it's obvious to me that she's got more stress than she can deal with. I encounter a wife at times who demonstrates instability and insecurity that baffles my thinking. I can't believe how unstable and insecure. Do you know what it goes like sometimes? I mean, we may be sitting there enjoying a perfectly good session of Monday Night Football when everybody should be excited. I mean, the right team's winning and everything's going good. And she says, "Do you love me?" I said, "Wait a minute. It's third and three. Fourth quarter, they're down by two. Do you think we could talk about this later?" She says, "No, but do you love me?" I say, "Of course I love you. Now, can you be quiet? They're about to snap the ball." She says, "Now, wait a minute. Do you really love me, though?" I say, "Of course I love you." She says, "Well, how come you never tell me?" And I say, "Well, listen, I bring the check home. I'm here every night most of the time. I love the kids. You know, I'm doing all this stuff." She says, "Well, why don't you tell me?" And I begin to think, is this woman crackers? I mean, does she think I changed my mind? I mean, I don't change my mind that easily. She's been trying to change my mind about some things for 15 years, and she hasn't changed it yet. Doesn't she know I haven't changed my mind about that stuff? If I change my mind about loving her, I'll probably let her know. But I see this insecurity and instability. Where's it come from? I come home sometimes and I find a woman there who I don't think I could find something that she'd agree with me about if I searched the phone book. I could say, "How do you spell white?" And we probably would not agree. There are times when I can't find a point of agreement with my wife. If I tried all night long, I wouldn't find one. There are times in my marriage that I come in, and I'll tell you, I find somebody who is not prepared to put a quarterback on the field all night long. She's there to play defense on everything that comes up. That woman has linebackers coming out her ears, ready to be defensive about anything I say. "What's for dinner? What do you mean by that?" "Well, I just mean, what's for dinner?" "What, you don't think I'm going to have dinner ready in time?" "No, I didn't say that. I just wondered what time, you know, I didn't see anything cooking, and I just, you don't plan to be here the whole evening? You have to eat and run again? You have to get out? What's the deal?" I say, "Man, she's defensive." And then I sit down and I say, "I wonder what's wrong with this woman. I mean, you know, five times up at bat, five times out. Is there some problem she's got? I mean, is it treatable?" That's the first question. "What's the rate per hour? What's the specialty?" Then you know what I find out? You know why my wife suffers from all those kinds of things? When I find my wife suffering from those kinds of things, I am able today to put my finger on the problem. You know what it is? She suffers from those problems when I am an inadequate lover. You say, "Wait a minute, it sounded like she had all the problems." Of course, I told the story. Who do you think's going to sound like they have the problems? When I go home and find that woman in my house, what I find out is that there is some treatment necessary, but guess who needs it? I do. Can you see it's going to be bad yet, guys? It really is. Because most of us are not real good at being lovers, the kind of love that we really need to have. I want to give you 6 tips on what it means to be a good lover. Anybody interested? I'll guarantee you, guys, you can just listen because your wife is taking notes. What does it mean to be a lover? Here it comes. Number 1. If you really love her, I don't mean,
well, yeah, I love her, I guess. And I love my mom.
Now, listen, if you really love her, the kind of love we're talking about tonight, it'll be obvious. Is it obvious that you love your wife? I mean, really obvious? Would anyone looking on as you interact with one another get the idea that there's any kind of bond there? Here's a quick test. Are you touching her right now? Is it apparent to anyone that there's something there that brings the two of you together? You know, it's really interesting. A lot of us operate with the idea that if the attitude's right, the action doesn't have to show up. We get that way about all of our relationships, don't we? It's a little sloppy when you get right down to it. The question is, would anybody looking on have the idea that there's love there? You know what's really important there? It's important that the person that you love get the sense that it's obvious. You know, there's a lot of times when we assume that somehow we are some sort of X-ray transparency that our mate can look in on, and we somehow have this display of qualities that should be radiantly apparent to them. And as long as love is still hanging on the meat hook in here somewhere, and she can get a look at it, then it shouldn't be necessary that it be obvious some other way. Can I share with you the obvious move that God had with regard to his love? Little book of Ephesians, chapter 5, it's the rest of that little verse I mentioned a moment ago. In verse 25, this is what Paul says about the obviousness of the love that God says he has for us. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. See, God wasn't just going to sit up there in the safety of heaven where everything goes great. There are no clouds that ever roll over. There are no times when there are brownouts. The power shortage never comes on in heaven. There are no times when devaluation of the dollar comes along or unemployment rises. All of the angels work. Isn't that exciting? Nobody is out of a job in heaven. There are no times up there when things get tough. You would think that God could just kind of sit up there and just kind of leak love. Wouldn't you think?
Love, 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 love.
Love, just kind of leaking out. And as long as we know he's up there leaking love, then we're okay down here. You know what God says about love? If you really mean it, it's got to be obvious. Paul said God made it blatantly obvious. Love your wife like Christ loved people. He made it obvious by giving himself up for them. The Apostle John in 1 John 4:7 said, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. By this the love of God was manifested in us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world so that we might live through him. And this is love, not that we love him, but that he loved us and gave himself, his Son, to be the propitiation or the covering for our sin, for our shortcoming." God made his love obvious to man. God wasn't just going to live up there leaking love our direction and expecting us to pick up on the love vibes. God comes along and says, "I'm going to make my love to you obvious, and the same way I did that to you, you should do it to your wives. Husbands, love your wives like God loves you, like Christ loved the church." The idea is there that if you really love her, if it's a genuine relationship that you have with that person that you say that you love, you'll be involved in them. Listen to what Paul goes on to say in Ephesians 5 in verse 26. "He gave himself up for her that he might sanctify her, make her different, set her apart, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all of her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless." You know what Paul says there is that Jesus Christ is involved in the process of making people better than they were before, making them perfect, making them different than people come. And he's doing that to prepare the church, to prepare people for the relationship that he has in store for them. He is actively involved in that love relationship. How many times is it true that people, though they say, I love you, and though they try and make it obvious, follow up by being uninvolved? We live in a world, we live in a society where the disenfranchisement of people with those people that they say they love seems to be at an all-time high. We've got all these dads running around saying, I am working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, so I can make all this money and provide a life for my kids like they never could have had, had I not been successful. If my dad had done this, boy, we'd have been hot stuff when I was a kid. I'm buying my kids the best vacations they can get. They're going to the best camps, the best bikes. My kid's got a surfboard, a skateboard, a boogie board. If they make any other kind of board, I'll get it for him. My kid is going to be the happiest kid, have all the things I never had. The problem is, in the process, he doesn't have a dad. And you come along to the kid and you say, kid, are you happy with all your stuff? And the kid says, I'd be happier if I could see my dad. Dad says, I'm doing it because I love him. The kid says, I'd rather have my dad. You see, real love, if you really love them, you'll be involved. There's no way to buy your way out of that relationship. To say, if I just contribute enough, you know, we live in a world where somebody calls and says, would you like to be involved in such and such a project? We're putting on a promotional for this, or we're putting on a deal for that. And you know the question, you ask it all the time. What is it? How much is it? If somebody wants us involved in something, we come to the immediate decision, it's got to carry a price tag. Tell me how much, I'll decide whether it's worth it to me, and then we'll just get on with it. God comes along and says, real love demands involvement. Are you involved in those relationships that you claim to be love? The Bible says God so loved you and me that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him would not perish, but be able to live forever, for God did not send Jesus Christ into the world to condemn people. He came to save people. God said it was not going to be enough to love and to be obvious in that love. He comes along and he says, I'm going to be involved. And he becomes involved through the person of Jesus Christ. You have to be involved. Third, do you really love her? If you're going to really love her, you'll be unconditional. We find in our lives a lot of occasion to work with people who seem to be falling out of love with one another. They say, we think this marriage thing is over with. We're not really thinking we're going to go on with it because it just can't be saved. And you say, how come? They say, it's not going to work because I can't love them anymore. Why can't you love them? Because they do this, and you do this, and you do this, and you do this. And all the things they do make them unlovable, can't love them anymore. Say, well, try a new kind of love. Say, what kind's that? The kind of love that is not given because of what they do. And if it isn't given because of what they do, it won't be withheld because of what they don't do. You know the kind of love I'm talking about? The kind of love that says, no matter what you do in your life today, no matter what you do to me, no matter what you do that's come in my direction, I'm going to love you anyway. That's a pretty amazing kind of love, isn't it? If you really love, it'll be a love that's unconditional. Is there a basis for that? John chapter 1. Let me tell you a little verse that the Apostle John opens up his gospel with. John 1:10, talking about Jesus Christ coming into this world. Listen to what he said. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world didn't know him. He came to his own, and those who were his own didn't receive him. Man, if I was the one who had made it all, and John said he was, earlier, just a few verses before that, he said he was the one who made it all. There was nothing made that was made by anyone but him. And he says he came into the world to his own people, and his own did not receive him or recognize him. And at that point, I'd say, sayonara, I don't need this. If I came to love people and they're not responding to me, I'll take it just so long and then it's over. John said he came and stuck it out because the kind of love he had was not conditioned on the response of people to him. In Romans chapter 5, Paul picked that theme up, talking about the love of God. In Romans 5:8, he said, "But God demonstrated his own love toward us in that while we were yet enemies of God, sinners, Christ died for us." That's the kind of love that's unconditional, that isn't given on the basis of you earning it. How often are we asking people in our lives to earn the relationship we have with them and them with us? Is that the kind of love you've got with the person who's the significant other in your life? Well, as long as they do the right things, I'll love them, but if the day comes that they step over the line... Had a friend who, when he got married, his wife turned out to be a nag. I mean, nag. I mean, really nag. And after a few weeks of it, they're driving down the freeway one day, and he looked at her, and she's nagging. And he looked at her, and he said, "Honey, if you keep nagging me, I'll still love you. I'll miss you, but I'll still love you." Now, I don't know if he was really picking up on the idea here, but I wonder in your life what your little list is. Do you have a list like that tucked away somewhere? Little secret list that says, if that person in my life ever violates this list, if they ever step over this line and do that which I have determined to be the unpardonable sin in our relationship, if they are ever guilty of this particular charge, that's it. No more love. And God says if you really love her, you'll love her unconditionally. Here's a fourth one. If you really love her, I mean really love her, you'll be consistent. You'll always be the same. Hebrews 13:8 tells us about Jesus Christ. You know what it says? It says he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. When you find out about Jesus Christ and how he reacts to people, you know what you can put in the bank? You know what you can count on in your life and your relationship with him? When you find out what he's doing in your life today, you can count on one thing, friend. What he's doing today, he says he will continue to do. God has made that commitment. Interesting point in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, as Paul writes that letter to that needy group of people in that trading center in Corinth. He said this in 2 Corinthians 1:18, "But as God is faithful, our word to you is not yes and no, for the Son of God, Christ Jesus, was not yes and no, but is yes in him." What he's saying is, God doesn't vacillate in his opinion toward you. He says God is faithful. When you've determined what God's response toward you is, if God says yes about something, it's yes. You can count on the consistency of God. It's a part of his character. You can take it to the bank. Is that the same thing true of you and your relationship with other people? Are you known for that in your love relationship with your spouse, with your honey, with whoever it is you love? Is your life one of those lives where somebody needs to check your barometer when you get up in the morning to find out if it's change, you know, is it going to be wet or dry? I mean, is storm coming? What's your barometer reading today? Do the kids come home and say, "Mom, is this a good day to tell Dad about such and such? Is it safe? Did he have a good day at the office? Are things on the up and up, or are we in trouble?" You know, the idea being that somehow we're dealing with people who can't be counted on to be the same. You want to have real love? You want to demonstrate the kind of love that really wins the heart of your partner? Have the kind of love that's consistent, that's going to be demonstrated to be unchanging in its positive view toward other people. And that's a fifth thing. If you really love her, I mean really love her, guys, you'll be positive. You know how tough it is to be positive in a negative world? Have you noticed how negative the world appears to be? Listen, if you watch network news long enough, you'll just turn into a quivering mass of jello laying between the sheets on your Posturepedic and say, "This is the best place to end life, right here." Why even go out there? Because if the world really looks like Roger Mudd said it is, I don't want to be a part anymore. I withdraw my membership from the human race. I'm out. Take my number and give it to somebody else. Is it tough living in a negative world? You know what the toughest part about living in a negative world is? Being positive. That's the toughest thing. And you know the toughest place to be positive in a negative world? Toughest place to be positive. You know where it is? It's in your marriage relationship, where you're under the delusion that you get to hang loose and be yourself. Does that work real well?
Hey, I've had a bad day. Just back off and give me some space.
Right? Does that work at your house? Do you notice how feminine the laughter is? The bears are all in their caves. Listen, if you really love her, I mean really love her, you'll be positive. What kind of positive are we talking about here? Are we talking about somebody that's just going to come cruising in and lay all kinds of lies out and say, okay, is that enough? Are you happy yet? Can I lay off this positive stuff and get back to reality? No. As a matter of fact, that's not what we're talking about. Ephesians 4:29 has a piece of good advice. Paul writes, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. Doesn't say anything about hammers in there. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification. You know what that word means? We have that same root in the word edifice. You know what edifice is? A big old nice building. Edification means to build somebody up. Let only the words come out of your mouth that build people up. Are you known for building people up? According to the need of the moment. You know what that means? That means you just don't cruise around saying, okay, I read a book, I got all these great words for building people up. 10 build-up phrases to use in any situation. So you come in and you say, well, I used line number 4 yesterday, I'll use number 5 today, 6 tomorrow, and by the time I got through 10 days, I'll be back on number 1. My wife forgets everything I do for her anyway, so she won't remember that I used this one on her before. And I'll just keep cycling this stuff through as if I were extemporaneous. Isn't that exciting? You know what Paul says? Don't let any unwholesome words proceed from your mouth, but only the good ones that are good for edification, that are right for the moment. That's what God's plan is, that it may give grace to those who hear. Is that what your life is all about at home, guys? When you run into that gal that really needs your love, can she expect that that which flows from your mouth is going to build her up? Does she walk away from times with you saying, I can't believe how exciting it is to be with that man? Because I always feel better when I walk away from him than I did before I got to be with him. That every time he opens his mouth, I know I'm going to feel good. Is that the way you're known around your house? When they hear that garage door open up, is mom standing at the sink saying, oh boy, he's home? You know, if the positive stuff was coming out of your mouth, that just might surprise the stew out of you. First Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 1 says, knowledge puffeth up, but love edifies. You know, you can know it all. You can have all the answers. You can pride yourself at never being caught with your pants down, never asked a question that you are not ready to respond to. And that doesn't mean you've scored a 1 on being positive. If you know everything it takes to know, you can still fail if you're not exercising love and edifying people with it. Don't let any unwholesome words come out of your mouth, but only the good ones that are good for building people up as the need of the moment indicates. If you really love her, you'll be positive. Last, number 6. If you really love her, I mean really love her, the kind of love that God has for people, if that's the kind of love you want to have, it'll be permanent. You can count on it. It's not going anywhere. Tomorrow is not going to bring any unusual condition to bear that's going to cause that love to be in question at all. Why? Because if it's like the kind of love that God says he has for people, it'll never go away. Romans chapter 8 and verse 35, Paul talks about the kind of love that God has. Do you know how long it lasts? Do you know how strong and secure it might be? This is what he says. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Verse 37, in all these things we overwhelmingly conquer through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death or life or angels or principalities, things present to things to come, nor powers, height, depth, or any created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. You know what the word is here? If you're in a love relationship with God, he says, you're in a relationship that's never going away. And he says, that's the kind of love that we are to have for one another. If you really love her, I mean real love, it's something that's permanent. Well, gals, tell me one thing. If that's the way he loved you, would you be happy? Pretty stupid question, isn't it? That's the kind of happiness God says he has in mind for men and women as they love one another. Now, can I remind you that the Apostle John says that if you have never received that kind of love, you can't give that kind of love. You can't just wake up tomorrow morning and say, well, you know, that sounded okay. Let's see, I'll wait a week and buy the tape, take a little better notes, and then I'll start doing that. Yep, that's what I'm going to do. My wife started nodding along with the whole deal. I watched her do it. And then we got home and she poked me a little while longer saying, gee, don't you think that was a good idea? So I guess, okay, I'm going along with it. I'll give it a run. Try anything once. Let me just tell you ahead of time. Save your breath. Because God says you can't give that kind of love until you get a dose of it yourself. And you don't get a dose of it yourself until you meet it, because that kind of love comes in a person. It doesn't come in a box. God doesn't send it down by some kind of celestial wave system. God says it comes in a person named Jesus Christ. He comes and sets up residence in the life of people. And when he's there, he says he'll never leave. And being there, he says that he's good for generating that kind of love so that people can have it for one another. Would you like to have that kind of love in your relationships? You got to have it first in your life. Would you join me as we close in prayer? God, we understand tonight that we have described the absolute ultimate, the ideal, a kind of relationship that every one of us, if we were honest with ourselves, men and women alike, say is more than we ever could have imagined we might ever be able to find. The kind of love that we've been looking for and some of us have never even seen, much less experienced. And in the face of all that, God, you say that that's your plan for people as they relate to one another. And you tell us we can't even begin to imagine giving that kind of love if we never got it from you in the first place. We have to be honest tonight. Some of us are skeptical about that. All of this sounds just too strange to believe. The idea of a God of love that you can't see or taste or feel, who says he wants that kind of relationship with us, and we know ourselves well enough to know that we're not really worth that, and we're suspect. It just sounds too good to be true. But God, you said you love us not because of what we are, not because we're good. You said you love us in spite of the fact that we aren't good. Father, if there's a person here tonight that wants that kind of love and doesn't have it, I pray, God, that right now, in a simple, quiet moment, that they'd ask for that love from you, using words like this, just to say, God, I know I'm not perfect. I know I've gone my own way. And I want that kind of love. And I ask tonight that Jesus Christ, the one who brings the love of God, would come into my life and take up residence in me. Give me that kind of love. I believe that he died for me, that he rose again. And I want him to forgive me for my sin and to love me. Thanks, God, that through that simple prayer of faith, if we really believe it, you take that love and put it in us. We, in turn, can give it to other people. I think that's what we want in our relationships, God. And we ask you that you'd help us to do that effectively with one another. And we pray for that in the name of your Son. Amen.
Did you pray with Bob just now? If we can minister to you in a more personal way by praying with you or encouraging you in a specific struggle that you're experiencing, we're available for that. It's our desire to see God's best fulfilled in your relationships. If this tape has been helpful to you, you'll be glad to know that other studies by Bob Shank are available by writing to Priority Living Incorporated. Priority Living is a ministry designed to reach men and women in business and professional circles with the good news of Jesus Christ and through the study of God's Word to help you discover priorities that make a difference. Get in touch with us at Post Office Box 2180, Orange, California, 92669, or give us a call at area code 714-544-8903.